Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Hello again, friends, coming to you live from Vachon Island, Washington. This is the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show radiating from the beehive of cultural awareness known formally as the Gene Bosch Voice of Vachon broadcast studio in the ever-bustling and absolutely bodacious heart of our pastoral island community. That was the voice of our founder, Brian Brown. Together we, the Brieflies, and our guests strive to keep Brian's brilliant flame alive by bringing you weekly episodes of the most intelligent discussion we can muster of current events laced with humor and empathy, always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. Our Briefly panel includes, back from traveling, our control board magician, Vachon Airport Commissioner, recently returned from Florida, and longest serving Briefly, Truman O'Brien.
Good morning. I'm here.
Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Also, professor, historian, down under aficionado, and now even more in demand than ever, guardian of the galaxy, Bruce Hallman. How's that recruiting going, Bruce?
I tell you, there's never enough guardians at this time and age that we live in.
That's for sure.
We are hopeful that you will prevail. It's a difficult mission. Also, legal beagle, mediator, Fulbright scholar, and Renaissance man, Craig Bellis.
I only speak one language, so I don't think I qualify as a Renaissance man.
Oh. I have not looked up the definition. Am I flunking on that one?
No, I mean, okay. When I think of a Renaissance man, I think of somebody who's competent in all major activities.
Oh, but you speak legalese and English both.
I mean, I do.
There you go.
I barely speak English.
We can do pig Latin training
there
soon
you go.
Here on
there you
the
go.
Voice. Yes. Part-time Politico, affordable housing advocate, and full-time shenanigans coordinator, Amy Dreyer is here.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. It is a good morning. Glad you're here joining us. All right, myself, I'm Kevin Jones, a mariner, backpacker, and most recently, electric vehicle owner.
We'll have to hear about that
a little bit. But let me first introduce our guest, Eric Walker, Church Council Chair of the Vachon United Methodist Church and former Vice President of Operations and the Chief Financial Officer of PATH, which is a global... Well, maybe you can tell us, Eric, how you're doing today and what PATH is.
Well, glad to be here. And PATH is a global health organization that focuses on, to use an old term, affordable, appropriate technology for global health solutions in other countries that need them.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Huge operation, right? Which countries did PATH serve in or support?
Up to 20 countries around the world in Asia, primarily Asia and Africa. A little bit in South America, but it was widespread.
Wow.
Okay, fantastic. Mm. Well, really appreciate you being here with us and here on Vachon. Let's see, Pastor Pat Longstroth would have loved to have been here, but is counseling a member of the congregation of the Methodist Church. So our good wishes to Pat, and so hopefully sometime in the future, Pat can join us for these kinds of conversations.
Yes, you should definitely try and get her back.
Okay, fantastic. We know she's doing good work, just a block down the road. All right, hey, before we cover the news of the day in our usual lighthearted but passionately serious fashion, let's first check in with the Brieflies and our guest about how things are going. So, Truman, Army Buddy stories are maybe a good time for that?
Well, actually, I just got back from Florida, as we said, Jacksonville, which I'd never been to, which is a kind of a pretty city. And it was my reunion of my Army unit from Vietnam, and I just realized it was like 58 years ago that I left Vietnam. I can't believe it's been that long. Mm-hmm. And some of these guys I've got to know again. Some of them I actually served with. I mean, I was in country with. It was our whole battalion has the reunion, and I was only in one little detachment. But I still met about five guys that I served with over there, which I thought was pretty cool. As we've talked about here on the Briefly a lot, my political stance is a little bit changed over the years, and theirs is still pretty right side of the mm-hmm. scale. I did not really get into it with them, except for one guy's wife, actually, not one of the guys. And we just got it. She's from Maryland, and of course, the gentleman that's been held in El Salvador is from Maryland, and so we had a little discussion about that. And she actually softened a bit. I was okay. impressed. Okay. I was good impressed. Work. But the other thing that I've done recently since I got back is that I went over yesterday to Bremerton. The Bremerton Community Theater, my niece is in the play. She's in the Jesus Christ Superstar and part of the ensemble. But boy, I'm telling you, those folks knocked it out of the park. Mm-hmm. The voices were just phenomenal. The production was great. The little theater is great. So I highly recommend, if any of you get a chance to go over to Bremerton, to that little community theater, I highly recommend it. They just did a great job. And one more shout out. On the trip, I downloaded Amanda Knox's book, Free, and I had it on my Kindle and read it. If you folks haven't read it yet, I highly recommend it. Extremely well written, very insightful, very instructional in nature. I thoroughly enjoyed it. So anyway, there you go.
All right. So just thinking back, was it last Tuesday that was? Oh, maybe I'm thinking ahead. Ignore that thought.
Whatever it was.
I'll come back to you on that one.
Okay.
Good. Bruce, how's things going with you?
Oh, going well. Busy week. My boat is out on the hard, as they call it, on the hard. You know, it's on in the boatyard, having the bottom done and some work done on it. You know, and so that's always sort of means when you live on Vashon, and the boatyard is not on Vashon, it means lots of trips back and forth to Gig Harbor, which is not a bad place to go. The museum had its gala, however you want to pronounce it, on Saturday night, and that was a fun party. 1960s theme, so a lot of 1960s rock and roll, a lot of people in hippie costumes, whatever that is. And for most of it means dressing like we do every day.
I was just going to say, normal wear? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So like I went into my wardrobe and thought, what did I wear today?
Mm-hmm. So like, is that tie-dye? No, oil stain, sorry.
right.
Exactly. Yeah. You know. And then on Sunday, had a big gathering of the grandkids and the family. And that's always a kick. You know, you get the five grandkids together and all running around the house. And it's always chaos, but it's always just a joy to watch them and watch them grow and change. And the relationships, I mean, they're just building these sort of lifelong kind of connections. And so that's really great. But and then, of course, watching the weather swing back and forth from summer to winter in 2 days.
Yeah.
Sort of typical Vashon spring. But everything's good.
Good.
Excellent. Craig, how are things going with you?
Good. I had a busy week. It was accentuated by three major events. I guess Indivisible Vashon at the Methodist Church, which I mm-hmm. think Kevin will probably mention a little more about here in a moment, with retired state senator Sharon Nelson. That was a wonderful meeting. And then Friday night, the Coop. It was Steve Ampson's theme night, and the theme was Willie Nelson, lo and behold. Mm-hmm. And I was privileged to sing perform at that. And then the Heritage Museum party. Lynette and I both had our dashikis on, for the period. Pulled those out of the closet. People do ask me that question. You must have a closet full of costumes. And I go, no, I just have my normal clothes.
Yeah.
That's right.
I don't know when I've seen you in a dashiki outside of that.
Okay. I've been caught.
All right.
Maybe during the festival you might see me once or something like that. But it was an excellent week. There were seven temporary restraining orders and preliminary injunctions entered against the current president. So that even was better, in my opinion.
Okay, I'm glad to see we're keeping the box score here.
Yeah.
What song did you sing, Craig, at the Willie Nelson?
I sang it in honor of my wife. She's a good-hearted woman. Oh, in love with a good timing man.
Absolutely. Good.
Written by Willie and Waylon and sung by Willie and Waylon, but not at the Coop.
Yes, yes. Well, you guys stand in. You. Amy, how has your week been?
My week was pretty good. I was also honored to join Bruce and Mr. Bellis at the Briefly's table at the gala, which was a lot of fun and really great. Jeff Hoyt did a very fun review of 1960s Vashon. And of course, you know, as with then and now, there aren't as many differences as we think there might be. That was really fun. And let's see, today I'm gearing up the Vashon Pirate Fast Pitch. We have a total of 3 home games this year, and 2 of them are coming up. One of them today. We're going to try to come off a pretty tough loss away at Klahalia last Friday, doubleheader. But what I hear, they're ranked like number 5 in the state or something like that for. So we are hoping the Pirates are going to fight back today and claim a spot in the district tournament. You can come on down to Munger Field at VHS at 4:00 today. Or you can come to the last home game next week, Wednesday, at 4:00 versus Seattle Christian.
Awesome. Yeah, that does remind me, the just to inspire athletes on Vashon Island, the Vashon Island Rowing Club had a regatta this weekend, and there were some gold medals that came back from that.
Oh. Nice.
Yeah, yeah, some nice. First, second, and third places. So nice. Go Vashon.
Yeah.
Right on. Eric, how's your week going?
My week is going much better. My wife and I have been struggling with what we think was RSV, and now we're definitely going to get that vaccine because we never want to do that again.
Oh, boy.
And just enjoying a recent trip down in the Southland to spend time with grandkids, and the type of chaos that was referred to before is just wonderful. So, and now I'm trying to figure out what is Brown Briefly and what am I doing here. So this is gonna be
okay. We'll lead you down that path, and I know I'm sure you and Bruce are going to be telling stories, grandkid stories, after this show. Okay, glad to hear that. Let's see. My week has been full of things. I missed Willie Nelson. I missed the Heritage Museum thing. I was boating in Port Orchard again. And they have, if you haven't been to downtown Port Orchard, there is a fine Thai restaurant there. So and very interesting, sort of funky, ramshackle seaside community shops. It's always worth the trip. Yeah. But I did come home to a wide open slip, so no risk to the Vashon as I came into dock. There's some benefit of having your boat in Gig Harbor.
Yeah.
Let's see. Also did get on the water today, so that was always awesome to be out. I'm a new electric vehicle owner. You know, I've been on the leadership team of the Vashon Climate Action Group forever, and I've always said that I'm part of the problem because I haven't made that switch. But now I have, and I know there's some electric vehicle drivers here around the table, at least one.
I do have to tell one quick thing about my trip.
Okay.
One of my best buddies I always refer to him as a crack research team for my morning scramble show because he listens to the show. And by the way, he listens to us as well.
Okay.
And he said he likes to hear Brian's voice at the beginning. And but anyway, he has an electric car that he uses in the wintertime. In the summer, he has a convertible, but in the winter, he just bought a Leaf that he has.
Yeah.
And he told me a story about doing a cross country in the Leaf. Said he went up to see his sister and he planned it so that he could stop halfway, recharge the Leaf at a fast charger at a dealership and drive on up. And then he could charge it up there and he got ready to come back. He got back to halfway and the dealership was either closed or they had a problem with their charger. And he was scrambling trying to find some way to charge his vehicle. And so he charged it up just to the minimum that he could charge it, shut all the accessories off. He said he got home, he had 7% in his car, but he made it all the way back. But he said that kind of cured him of doing cross countries in the electric car. Mm-hmm. So there
okay,
you go.
Yes.
There
the
you
internet go. Is your friend, I understand,
indeed,
when
indeed.
You're doing that.
Yeah.
But let's see. I know, Eric, you're driving electric. Do you have one pedal driving in your electric vehicle?
Yes, we do. That takes a little getting used to it.
I'm fascinated with one pedal driving. You know, you say, for those who don't know what that is, when you remove your foot from, it's not the gas pedal, it's the accelerator. You just back your foot off a little bit and the car starts to decelerate. And if you remove your foot entirely from the pedal, it slows down pretty rapidly. Mm. So anyway, and I'm enjoying learning that, but I can tell you when we took the boat out, we had Susie's car. And so I'm parking it on the street side, and I pull into what looked like a pretty long open space to be able to park a Honda Pilot in. And I was feathering, and the car just kept on going. And it's like, wait a minute. So, yeah, be aware, right? It's tremendously fun to do one-pedal driving, but when you're not in a one-pedal drive car, yeah, they just roll.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds like the fastest way for me to accelerate into a deer that jumps onto the road as I slam my foot onto the one pedal.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, they don't remove a pedal. It's just you don't have to theoretically use the brake pedal. Yeah, it's always there. It's always there just to put you at ease. Okay, let's take a walk down. Oh, unless there's another comment? Nope. Okay. Nope. Let's take a walk down memory lane. Today, actually, today is April 29th, International Dance Day for the dancers here, and also World Wish Day. So,
I wish I could dance. There you go.
Well, Amy, International Dance Day is in your honor, I think.
It is. It is. Just watch me tiptoe the light fantastic across the globe.
You did great on stage at the theater when we did the backup dancer.
Yeah, I thought so too.
You know, don't sell yourself short.
Backup is the key word.
Okay, and now the final challenge is, how do we weave this into the story? It is in the United States National Zipper Day.
We could say zip it across your mouth and shut up. You know, there you go.
Okay.
Yeah,
and I don't know of any relationship to, you know, dancing or wishes. But zippers. No. Okay. All right. As the brief least contemplate that dilemma, today in history, construction of the Spirit of St. Louis. I bet some people here know what the St. Louis actually was.
Indeed.
Okay. It's an airplane, if you didn't know. 1927. Yep. And construction of the Golden Gate Bridge is completed in 1937, just 10 years later. So a big day for completing construction projects.
Hold on for a second. You can't leave those topics without letting Truman or I comment on it.
I was trying to open the door for that.
I was going to say, the thing that always amazes me about the St. Louis and Lindbergh's trip across from Long Island to Paris is he was carrying 2,700 pounds of fuel in that plane.
Yeah. Over a ton. Yeah.
Yes, almost a ton and a half. And the other thing was he made the cockpit about as uncomfortable as it could be so that he would stay awake.
Oh.
I have one more comment about that. And that it's kind of a fluke that he actually made it. And the reason is because he iced up halfway across the Atlantic. And when he did, of course, he began losing altitude. And he got down right down on the water, and the ice began to melt off. And so he had to stay within one wingspan of the water, which puts him in ground effect, which means that he can get more mileage out of that fuel. And so without doing that, he would not have made it. He would have been short.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. Ground effect makes you go faster.
Well, it makes you burn less fuel because it's more efficient. So,
okay.
Yeah, you get more lift when you're within one.
And here you are.
Yeah. Air is thicker.
Yeah. So well, no, it's one. You get kind of a cushion under the wing.
Like pushes against.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you're riding on a pillow.
There's a cushion. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
A pillow of air.
Yeah, but you have to remember, he had no forward vision.
None. Yeah.
He could open the window, which he used to do, or he could turn, he could slip to the side to take a look. But he had a lot of experience doing that because he used to fly mail. And the mail would all be stacked up in front of him, and he couldn't see out the window of the plane in his regular job.
Wow. So, and they didn't put that in the postal code, you know, the weather and
no,
the mail.
No,
and
all they did not.
Not visible out the window of the airplane? Okay, cool. Let's see, who here remembers the Seattle earthquake?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I wasn't here.
1965? No, lots of heads shaking. Amy, no. We were going to ask about, you know, whether that preceded your birthday.
It did. You're getting colder.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We're going the wrong direction. I do remember the 1965 Seattle earthquake. I was walking to my elementary school, Bryn Mawr, and I was about two blocks or so away from the house, which they're not city blocks. I was walking on the trails and got to the dirt road that went up to the paved road, and the earthquake hit, and I hit the dirt. Oh. I mean, I literally was like spread eagle on the ground. Wow. In the gravel.
Wow.
And thinking in my head, this is where crevasses open up and kids get swallowed in the center of the earth, right? So, you know, I don't know how. I guess I'd have to do the math on how old it was.
But, do you know how big it was? Do you have that?
I don't know that, but I do know 5 people perished.
Oh,
so,
wow.
You know, not a small thing. Susie says that she was in her school and it looked like the hallway looked like a wave coming in. It was actually rippling the surface of the floor.
Wow.
Okay. So that was that. R-E-S-P-E-C-T, released by Aretha Franklin, 1967, on this day. Nixon says he will release the tapes on this day, 1974.
Wow.
This is what I was thinking earlier today, earlier in the show, the fall of Saigon today, 1975.
I had been gone a long time when that happened,
And one other significant event.
Yes.
This is the 100th day.
Mm. Oh, yes. My God.
Yeah.
That didn't show up on the websites that I checked.
Yeah.
It will soon.
Okay. Well, thank God for that. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Also, baseball record, Roger Clemens strikes out a whole bunch of Seattle Mariners, 20 Seattle Mariners in 1986.
Wow.
And I was wondering, is that an unusual thing to strike out that many Seattle Mariners?
Okay, not in 1986.
One of those years. All right.
Yeah.
Got that sorted. Let's see. Wrecking cranes start to dismantle the Berlin Wall in 1990.
Wow.
Actually, one of my NATO colleagues talked about how his job in the German army was to go and meet his counterparts on the other side of the wall.
Wow.
He said it was a nervous time.
Oh, indeed.
You might imagine.
My time in Germany, it was 1968 and 69. And, of course, 68 was the Czechoslovakian invasion by the Soviets. So things were a little tense for me as well. In fact, in the job I was in, I was not allowed within 5 clicks of the border.
Wow.
So, because it was too exciting. Yeah.
Yes. Well, this fellow said he knew as he visited the army base on the other side of the wall that they had plenty of weapons, and he was pretty sure they weren't going to use them. But he was very concerned.
Keywords there, pretty sure.
Yes, pretty sure. And it turned out that was the truth.
Yep.
Yeah, he was okay. All right, small talk. Let's move on to a discussion with our guest. Eric Walker, if you could please let us know a little bit about yourself, how you came to discover Vashon as as a place for you and your family to live.
Well, I was living and working in Washington, D.C., and found out about a job in Seattle at this small nonprofit called PATH, and was actually recruited for the job and took the job and came out. And it was 1985, and it was only about $15-20 million a year operation. And I had been working in international development, as it was called then.
Mm-hmm.
And this was just a good stepping stone. Had been living in the suburbs of D.C. and wanted to find some place a little bit more rural.
Mm-hmm.
Got on a ferry in West Seattle, Sun came out, Mount Rainier came out, everything was still pretty affordable back then, and I said, this is the spot for me.
So excellent.
Landing on Vashon and have been here ever since.
Fantastic.
When was that? How long ago?
1985.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not I'm still kind of a mid-range person on Vashon. I'm not a newbie anymore, but I'm also not an old-timer at that range.
Yeah, it reminds me of the story that I heard about a Mainer apparently talking to some people who'd moved into the community there where he lived for generations, and somebody asked him about when do you actually become a Mainer, and he said something like, well, if a cat were to have kittens in the oven, you wouldn't call them pot roast, would you? No, you wouldn't. They're yeah, they're still coming in from the outside.
Right over your head.
Yeah. Let's see. The other thing, have you lived formerly in a place like had this many trees around, or is Vashon kind of new to you in terms of the, you know, forestry and everything?
Kind of new. Grew up in the high desert in Southern California. And so mm-hmm. More used to scrub and heat and earthquakes and wildfires. So there's some similarities, but no, mostly this was a new environment. And of course, it looked like the Emerald Wonderland that mm-hmm. it superficially is. So
okay,
different,
awesome,
but wonderful. I've enjoyed it.
Awesome. Fantastic. Well, we are going to ask, Eric, you all the questions we had for you and Pastor Pat. So, Bruce, I think you have a next opportunity.
Sure. Eric, lots of changes going on in churches of all denominations. And, you know, the death of Francis and sort of what's going to go on with the conclave that starts next week and all those kind of things. Could you talk a little bit about how you see the search for health equality around the world relating to not only the Methodist Church, but other churches, particularly in your experience?
Wow, really big question. I think that one of the big challenges in all churches, but particularly mainline denominations, is this decade-long shrinkage where it's no longer the kind of the authority people turn to. There's a great kind of religious philosopher, Phyllis Tickle, that died a few years ago, mm-hmm. who talked about the 500-year transitions mm-hmm. in our societies about what is the authority people turn to. And she said, we're in the mm-hmm. midst mm-hmm. of one of those transitions right now, and we're about 100 years out from when the point should actually occur, and so we should begin watching for things that suggest a change in authority. Sure. And it feels like we're in the middle of maybe a blip, maybe a big one, but that diminishment of mainline denominationalism is a challenge, because in the Methodist Church, we have the United Methodist Committee on Relief, which is called UMCOR, which funds a lot of relief and development efforts around the world. But the money flowing into UMCOR is diminishing because the size overall of Methodism is shrinking. And so the effect of kind of Christian-based, worried about the other population, taking care of folks, is on a squeeze, and that's having an effect. And especially with the obliteration of USAID that just happened, it's a giant earthquake or tsunami in the field of global health. So at this Methodist Church on Vashon, as we've felt that denominational squeeze, we've been trying to think about, okay, what's next? How do we leverage what we have into be consistent with our Christian beliefs of taking care of others? And so the partnership with the food bank that's been underway, the Vashon Youth and Family Services delivering a lot of services. What we have is location. We're in the middle of town, mm-hmm. and we had space. And so that using that space for good is kind of what we've become. And even though we're a small but mighty congregation of only 30 worshipers every Sunday, we're trying to make a big mark in the services that are delivered to the community in that space.
Okay.
So I like that concept. We're in this 500-year transition. I mean, you can really see that in many, many ways. And we're, like you say, we're near the apex of that change, and it's happening rapidly. What do you see in terms of happening with international aid, in particular with sort of decimation of USAID and sort of the shrinking of congregations, just not only in here in the U.S. but around the world, and what's taking that place, or is anything?
I don't know what's taking its place, other than there's a very natural part of humanness in many, many, many humans is to be concerned and care about others and where we live mm-hmm. and the environment, etc. So the big bet is, will that goodness emerge as dominant enough to fill in those gaps to begin to step up. There's too much transition right now. It's just very, very chaotic. I'm on the board of Village Reach, which is about the last mile of delivering health commodities to the furthest out village. And the good news for us was we weren't very much funded by USAID, but now there's going to be all this competition for all these other funds that still exist, whether it's Gates Foundation or others, to try and fill the gap. So it's awfully chaotic right now, so we're just going to have to see how it plays out.
Mm-hmm. One other, if I could just do a little follow-on. I know that.
By the way, he changed the question. Is that okay?
It's okay. Yeah, I know. I should have warned you that whatever comes into the Briefly's mind is fair game. You can always say, I don't have the answer to that. Yeah. But I do want to ask, I think you and I talked a while ago about the fact that the Vashon United Methodist Church is what the Vashon Church is affiliated with. But there's another I don't want to say division, but another aspect, another organizational aspect of the church because of some denominational changes. I don't know if I got that right or if you wanted to comment on anything along those lines.
I think a huge change that happened last year was that...
doctrine changes, I should have said.
After 50 years of wrangling over whether LGBTQ plus people could be in the pulpit in the United Methodist Church, after trying to discern how to do that, we finally said, nope, that's it. We're going to vote and split. And so the United Methodist Church divided between one group that's called the Global Methodist Church, which kept all the old rules in the book the same, where other folks could not be clergy. And the United Methodist Church changed that language to open it up for what was actually happening for decades, but nobody was really saying much about it. So that has happened. And so now we have that burden of conversation about what should we do about that off our backs, and now we're able to look more forward into more productive pursuits as a legislative body, because the United Methodist Church has conferences all over the United States. Ours is called the Pacific Northwest Conference. There's 180 churches across the state, and once a year we get together and try and decide things. So with Robert's Rules approach, with some consensus thrown in, and so that's always an interesting process.
If I could follow up with that, just a sort of a local Vashon question. Is all of the churches on Vashon are struggling with declining sort of congregations? And there are efforts to have cooperation, particularly between the Episcopal, the Methodist, Presbyterian, Lutheran, the mainstream sort of denominations. How is that going and what's happening? And are other sort of more evangelical churches becoming part of that? Or what's happening on Vashon?
Well, so far, not much, other than we're all pretty much shrinking. I think the Catholics might be holding steady, but the rest of the mainline denominations are shrinking, and we haven't yet found ourselves in enough of a crisis point to start conversations about, well, maybe we should merge. There's other Methodist churches that have joined up with other denominations in the state to form a combined congregation, but not happening here. I think we're all trying to figure out how to leverage our resources to stay afloat through Presbyterians, cooperative preschools and the like, or the feeding program, or us getting rental income, et cetera. So we're trying to make the business model work, but not yet looking at merger and acquisition, if you will. Great. Stay tuned. I think that's got to be coming. How many churches were there originally on Vashon Island? Weren't there like 50 or 60, and they were all based on the mosquito fleet access?
Every community had their own church. I don't know the exact number. There were probably 30, 35 churches around the island. Because everything, there were no roads, initially. And even when there were roads, difficult to sort of get around. So most churches were within walking distance. So, churches at Liza Beulah, at Docton, at Burton, at Ellisport, just all around the island. And it's interesting to watch how that consolidation took place, particularly in the 30s and 40s into the 50s, and sort of the construction of the two big churches in downtown Vashon, which occurred in 1908 and 1910, I think. And then in the 60s, the Lutherans, the Episcopalians build new churches. St. John Vianney built a new church. And then from that point on, it's been very static. There's been a few new evangelical churches built on the island, and some have taken over older abandoned churches, but you know, it's really an interesting sort of process to watch what's happening right now.
I was wondering a little bit more about PATH and your experience with PATH and how that kind of informs, you know, your work on the island and what you see on the island and what we can learn from PATH in terms of resilience.
PATH grew out of really, essentially, the smallest, beautiful Schumacher movement into appropriate technology, which was kind of a movement from that, where what is the technology that's most affordable that fits what users really need and want is what PATH was about, except it was in medical devices, vaccines, and other medical treatments. Is talk to the people on the ground, find out what's really needed, collaborate with the local government in terms of what they can actually afford, leverage philanthropic resources or formerly U.S. government resources to fill in the gap for a price differential that was unfortunately part of it. You couldn't make things cheap enough that they really needed, but you could make them pretty darn cheap. And PATH figured out how to merge that user feedback, R&D, philanthropic connection into a solution that allowed it to really take off and help a lot of people.
What would be a tangible example?
Low birth weight of newborns is a critical indicator of their life expectancy. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't a way to easily weigh babies out in the bush. And so PATH put through R&D a handheld spring steel scale that could be made super inexpensively that had a hook, and once you put the baby-carrying device, the shawl, on that hook and held it up by hand, there was simply one indicator. Was it red or not red? And that was about low birth weight marker or above low birth weight.
Wow.
And so that allowed for kind of essentially triage. If it was a low birth baby, you did this. If it wasn't, you did that. So that was a product that PATH developed. And later, they got into much more sophisticated work and particularly did a lot of vaccine development work at the behest of the Gates Foundation, which was kind of the evolution of moving away from those practical primary health care devices into something more sophisticated. Mm-hmm. So the translation into my work, my wife says, you're retired. How come you're still working? You're addicted to work. I'm afraid that's true. But I should find an antidote, I think.
Yes.
It's about listening to people, figuring out what people need, and leveraging resources. So putting in the solar and storage system at the Vashon United Methodist Church was about our care for creation as Christians and trying to lower our carbon footprint driven by that and leveraging state resources to get a big grant to pay for it and then go get the 30% IRA cash payment for nonprofits and put the whole thing together to pay for almost the whole thing. So that's kind of a link into the local stuff I'm doing. I'm not how strong it is, but that's my attempt to answer your question.
Yeah.
So several years ago, I had a friend who was working with, they were drones, but they were like little airplanes. They weren't like the current drones that we have. And they were delivering medication out to remote areas. Was that part of your program as well?
Absolutely. Village Reach was leading the charge in partnering, in particular with a South African drone manufacturer.
Right.
So to try and make it local.
Right.
And not leverage resources from too far away into developing, in effect, a mini air company.
Right. Yeah.
That would have routine drops.
Exactly. Yeah. This company, I think, was in Arlington, in Washington, that he was working with. But they were developing the technology that would allow them to do that.
I'm sure other people at Village Reach know all about that company.
But I found that really fascinating. I was involved with the some of the beginning work, and I'm just losing the name of what they're calling themselves now, but the social network, Vashon Social Network, is that what
social
it's called?
Social Services Network.
Yeah.
The SSN, I think.
It's yeah. And I know they're doing a lot of work, and I know that also the Methodist Church is doing a lot of that work. Can you explain more about some of the things that you folks are doing and how that might relate to the Social Services Network?
Yes, Vashon Social Services Network, which mm-hmm. is made up of the social service providers on Vashon,
right.
And they meet regularly to coordinate. Mm-hmm. It turns out that's a pretty unique occurrence mm-hmm. in like circumstances in the mainland.
Believe me, I know this.
People don't coordinate.
Some of the original originators of that, and it was incredibly difficult putting that together. So anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So there's apparently some kind of forces that keep that from happening. But when it does happen, then you have efficiencies and collaboration of people working together. So to say again, our superpower was location, location, location.
Yeah.
People needed to be a place where services could be walk up or come to easily, have parking, main thoroughfare. And our former pastor, Paul Mitchell, was on the board of the food bank and mm-hmm. was very well connected to the social services agencies, as our new pastor, Pat Longstroth, is becoming more and more involved in, to make sure that that the spaces are available for people to deliver the services they need. Mm-hmm. So I think it's that combination of having location and coordination that makes it all work.
So, do you have like showers? I mean, do I see signs saying showers are available?
Yeah, when we renovated the what we call the education building, right. which is now being taken over by the food bank for their work, we installed showers for community showers as needed. And the challenge is always having volunteers willing to come and sit for 2 or 3 hours at a particular time so people can come and take showers. So Vashon Youth and Family Services is now staffing that, and then it all takes a little bit more volunteers. Like my wife washes the towels after
Perfect.
It's all done. Mm-hmm. But it could happen a lot more. It could be open a lot more, but it's a volunteering challenge.
Yeah, I want to follow up a little bit on that as well. We've been knocking around the phrase community service hub, and I think I've heard resilience hub. What's meant by a resilience hub? Is that a term that you use at Vashon United Methodist and other United Methodist churches?
We are starting to, and it's becoming a buzz phrase at the county level, city level, state level, as they want to help communities respond not just to disasters or environmental challenges, but also health and other housing, other community needs. So the current definition that we're working from, and let me read this if you don't mind. A resilience hub is a trusted community-serving facility that supports communities in everyday life and before, during, and after an emergency.
Mm.
So a resilience hub could be a disaster response-focused phenomenon. Like that's why we put in the state funded us to put in the solar and storage, was that when the grid goes down, people will come. It's open for people to come. And that's something we had to say, yes, we'll do that in order to get the grant. But it's also being thought of as everyday life. And so what's happening with Vashon Youth and Family Services and in the future food bank on our campus is about everyday thing. The OASIS program of Vashon Youth and Family mm-hmm. Services is about connecting people to county, state services. It's happening all the time. It's an everyday, every weekday occurrence. So what we realize is we're already a resilience hub by this definition. But if more resources are becoming available for resilience hubs, we're working with the providers to see how we can leverage that new concept in the funding environment. You know, grant seeking, right? You got to give the people what they want to get the money. So. But it's real, it's already happening, but this is the new label for it that seems to work pretty well.
You know, one of the things that fascinates me, I've said this before many times about Vashon, is the coordination that occurs between organizations. And almost every organization that I've been involved with, they had a contract with some other organization or organizations that defined, okay, this is what we've got, what have you got, and how's this going to work together? So are you guys working toward that contractual kind of an agreement, or is it just kind of an open handshake?
I think that the deal, if you will, with the food bank is really a hard contractual commitment to all of this. And it's been in the work for 5 years. It was just finally signed, sealed, and delivered a couple months ago. Right. And they're in King County permits for the building of their new warehouse. That's going to be where the playground is behind the church, and they'll take over that secondary building, and they'll run their full operation out of that campus on a long-term arrangement. So that's kind of our contractual deal, I guess.
Exactly. One other quick question, and that is on your solar. You do have solar battery backup so that you can be completely off the grid?
Yes. Okay. We have actually six products that are called power walls. Right. They have a brand you might
know about that brand.
We don't speak that.
We do know about that. Yeah, the swastika brand. Yeah, we know that one. Yeah.
But they do make the best product. Yeah, if you talk to Evan Leonard at Artisan Electric, who's been our person who put all this stuff in, the best product out there. So we have four Tesla walls for the sanctuary and two Tesla walls for the parsonage. And our plan is to be able to stay up for 3 days in a snowy day in January.
You know, I'm with the airport, and I'm on the board of the airport, and we've been working toward that, working with Evan as well. And we were hoping for a grant last year, which we didn't qualify. Well, we qualified for, but we didn't get. And this year they did not offer the same grant, so we're hoping next year we're going to be able to get that grant and pursue that. So, but we want to do the same thing for that disaster preparedness.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, if I could maybe just do a little bit of follow-up, Eric, because you just recently, Teresa Mosqueda, King County Council member, visited the church. What kind of conversation was held with her there regarding the work you're doing at the church?
Well, first let me acknowledge that Kevin and his people put a lot of this together. The attractiveness that we had is we have an installed system. It's not just a pipe dream. It's real. It's happening. It's there, state funded. And Teresa was out for the Vashon household community meeting, and we invited her to come by and look at the installation. And it ended up that King County Resilience Hub people came, state people came, the community relations people from Commerce came. And it was a very interesting conversation. We had about 15 people there, and also our local nonprofits that provide services. And the first half of the meeting was Teresa Mosqueda finding out what's going on in King County through the other people that were there. It was like a unique exchange of, oh, you're doing this, you're doing that. From that meeting, things became a little bit more concrete, where we hope to be acknowledged as a designated King County Resilience Hub pilot program. We actually have a Beachcomber article in the works with Alex that we hope will come out soon, but as long as individual Vashon stops its street events, maybe we'll make it in the Beachcomber.
We do grab some headlines occasionally.
I had a question. I mean, with your experience with PATH and that sort of last mile phenomenon, I mean, it's great to have all these services, but it's getting that last mile to the people that actually need it. How is that working on Vashon, and how are you bridging that sort of last mile to the people and the individuals and groups on the island who need the services that you provide?
I think the two places that I see it, and I'm only seeing this from my narrow perch, one is the OASIS program at Vashon Youth and Family Services. Yeah. There's people in and out of there all the time, and the dental truck comes and the health van comes. You see them out in front of the church. That's all visibly saying, hey, you can come. The nonprofits are very active in protecting people who come in the building. We've got all the right signage up and taken training on what to say and not say if certain people, non-uniform people, show up and want to have access to the building. And the second one is the community meal. Mm-hmm. Every night of the week, Presbyterian Church, we're feeding up to 25 people. And the really interesting thing is not a lot of people stay and eat there. It's a lot of carryout. Some of this is left over from COVID, but it's people are able to take the food and eat it where they're comfortable. They may not be as social and want to sit in that room with, you know, talkative, gregarious folks that live on the street, and they want to go off. Some people take five meals for their family. So people know that's there, and they're taking advantage of it.
I have to tell you, I'm going to go back again to the beginning of the social services network. We worked for probably a year before we could come up with something where we could work together. And do you know what it was?
The community meal.
The community meal. That was the thing that we all finally said, okay, that's all something, that's something that we can all participate in. And this is when I was at the Vashon Community Care. That was our part in that. But I find that really interesting that that is still a major hub that that allows this thing to function.
So. It happened in the basement of the Episcopal Church. Sally Carlson was the chef, right. And Food Bank provided food, Thriftway, IGA, and then volunteers would come in and chop it all up, and it was quite an operation.
Yep, I remember that very distinctly. But I find that interesting that that was the spark that finally made it all work.
And it's all about breaking bread.
There you go.
That's the nature of it. That's the nature of community. And so it is a great place to start.
A couple questions just on the Resilience Hub. How do you utilize the service? When do you know that it's happening? And, you know, is this the kind of place if it snows and, you know, power's down on the island, do you just sort of come by and, you know, use your phone for a while? Or is it more like you can come and spend the night if your heat is down and you don't have access? Like, what are some ways that folks can interface with the Resilience Hub?
So that's the part that we're working on now, because we as a church can't provide all of that. Basically, with the 30 people we have, we can stick a folding table outside the front door with an extension cord and say, bring your devices and charge here. Or if it's a sunny day, you can charge your electric vehicle because we have an EV charger out front, right? So as long as the solar's full on, we'd be able to offer that. But it's going to take fire department, who manages all disaster response, police department, Vashon Be Prepared in particular has been on point on getting money for trainings for how to do this, and other social services groups and volunteers. So when the grid goes down for an extended period, you go, okay, Converge Methodist Church, power's on. We're in the process of seeking funding to convert our natural gas furnace to heat pumps. But it's ironic because in a disaster, it would probably be better to have natural gas burning because it's not even draw down our batteries. So that's a little bit of a conundrum for those eco-warriors among us. But anyway, we're working on that, and we're just beginning to the point of getting the word out that this is here. So we've got to get something done before winter comes back.
Got it.
So people know.
Got it. And are you currently a cooling station and a warming station? Are you one of those locations?
We have not declared that, but that's the kind of thing that will come out of this additional work to be able to say, you can come here if you can get here, or maybe we connect with the four-wheel drive vans to bring people in. I don't know. There's a lot of coordinating work to do on that front, but certainly could be. And if we flip to the heat pumps, we could be a cooling station. But that would mean more batteries, and we're talking to state for more money. We got to figure that all out.
Don't be taking the airport's money. No, I'm kidding.
Well, I do know, Eric, because we have been talking about this for quite a while, you and I and others on the island, about this Resilience Hub. And you know, right now it's like lowercase Resilience Hub, right? Hoping to become uppercase Resilience Hub. But the thing that was so attractive, I think, to King County was that all of that infrastructure you mentioned is in place now, and the processes, all the things, Amy, you're asking about, right? How do we actually make this happen? So great to hear that you're pursuing the funds, you know, to be able to enable that, and more yet to come, right?
Yeah. And I was just kind of wondering if folks are, you know, want to volunteer and help this happen, because we have so many people on the island who I think would be just aces at standing this up and giving their expertise and their time. How can they get involved with this?
It's not well coordinated yet, but I think the on point is Vashon, be prepared. Because Vicky has been working, talking to us, figuring this out. It's been moving a little slowly, but they've been doing some training recently. So I would say reach out to Vashon, be prepared, and say they're interested. Mm-hmm. Would be a good first step.
Okay. And if they wanted to get more involved with the church and, you know, some of the programming that you're doing there, including the food bank, including being a community access point for resources, how would they do that?
Contact the church, and I don't know if there's contact information on the website. VashonMethodist.org would be the best thing to do right now.
Awesome. Eric, really appreciate you giving a summary of all the work being done at the Methodist Church to serve the community in so many different ways. So really appreciate that. We do have about another 4 minutes left. I did want to ask Craig, you helped us achieve a visit by Sharon Nelson at the Indivisible Vashon meeting at the Methodist Church. Any thoughts you want to share with our audience, our listening audience, about how that day went?
Well, I thought it was a great meeting. It was really well organized at the Methodist Church. We had a full house. After Sharon gave a rousing presentation, Sharon has took a bit of a break from politics after she left the state Senate, but now is back in the fray. Big time motivating individuals. We got together into various groups. Well, we had, as many of you know or may not know, Indivisible Vashon has various focus groups that key in on certain kinds of things. And we picked just a few of those as an example and did some scenario testing, if you will, come up with actual examples of what those groups could do to address the issues that Sharon brought up. But Sharon's comments were primarily addressed at basically the issue of kidnapping people off the citizens off the street and sending them to concentration camps. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the language she used.
Yes, she did.
Yep. So, it was an excellent meeting.
Mm-hmm. And I think Sharon's key point that I heard was get involved.
Right.
Find a way. If you have concerns in some area, find somebody else who has those same concerns. Work together. We all need to come together at this point.
And so. Indivisible Vashon is the answer for many people. We get asked, you know, I want to do something, but I don't know what to do. You can go to Indivisible Vashon's website and you'll find some things you can do.
Absolutely can. And let's see, we are going to have another community meeting in May, so check the website for that. It'll be right at the top of the homepage. In terms of community and getting together, May Day, there are definitely some plans in the works for May Day. And Indivisible Vashon, it turns out, will be joining with Vashon Mori Surge, Showing Up for Racial Justice. We will be participating in the Workers and Immigrants Build Power Together is the theme of the May Day rally at Cal Anderson Park, May 1st at noon. So there's a couple options. At noon, we plan to gather to the right of the stage. I'm pretty sure that's, you know, audience right. And you'll see it looks like we have our Indivisible Vashon flag. It will be available for that event. So cross fingers on the schedule that comes in. There's others who are going to be taking the 925 water taxi and going up to the federal courthouse to also continue our awareness raising about people who have been disappearing from the streets of our country and going off to high security prisons in a foreign land. So if you'd like to join us, show up at the 925 water taxi. You'll see a whole bunch of signs and a lot of energy going to Cal Anderson Park after we stop at the federal courthouse. Otherwise, just see it at Cal Anderson Park. But let's see, Craig, what's the next big thing for the Brown Briefly?
Well, very, very quickly, next week we've got the Give Big Hub of Love you know, money-making arrangement that all of the nonprofits are trying to engage in. We're going to have at least a couple. We'll have the Backbone Campaign, and the O-Space will be with us next week, and we'll get to talk to them and find out what they're doing.
Awesome. Backbone and O-Space, they've had a long and cordial relationship on the island, so it'll be great to have them both on the show.
Yeah, and the Voice of Ashland, KVSH, will be, again, that hub of love. For 2 days, we're going to be doing, we're going to have all the nonprofits that we can gather coming into the studio and tell us about their events.
Fantastic. Find out what those, or all of those nonprofit organizations that you hear about are doing on Vashon and how you can help them. All right. Hey, for Eric, Truman, Bruce, Craig, and Amy, I'm Kevin, and we really thank you for listening today, and we will see you again next week on the Brown Briefly.